what I'm experiencing right now is the space that I find myself in receiving those words, and that I experience a space of quiet or silence or stillness as something that is very deeply nurturing, as though I've I'm in this place that is home, very familiar. And then my awareness also goes to when I'm home, I'm not fully in the world. That it's only part of life. That being home in this space I can call the self is only a part of being alive. That the part that is the self in life creates a different dynamic. Somehow it's no longer still. It's no longer silent, but it's alive and moving and dynamic. Now I sometimes can experience a sense of stillness in the dynamic movement, that there's a centeredness that I don't lose. And yet I want to remember that the self in life is the part of reality that is here and that I want to attend to. And so in the larger context of the focus today is I want to remember that I am in relationship to life. I am in the world. I am living in relationship. And the different dimensions of relationship are there's the self in relationship to other selves, other individuals, others, other people. And the relatedness, the exchanges, the verbal and nonverbal communication and dialogues that entails. Then there's another dimension that I'm in relationship to, which is what I call relationship to the world, which includes others, but it's the world. And there's two aspects to the world: relationship to systems, organizations, businesses, systems of all kinds that I am in relationship to. And then another aspect is in relationship to the world, is in relationship to my everyday functioning, just to the doingness, the taskiness, all the activities that I'm engaged in. As an aspect of when I am alive, this is a good part of where I spend my time and energy, in my doing. So that's part of my awareness of how I am alive. And then there's another sense, another dimension that I identify that is larger and more encompassing, where I'm in relationship to all of life, the totality of life, existence itself, which includes the natural world. And I'm in relationship to the world. And maybe I'm in relationship to the larger context of what life is at all. So I it's important for me to find my place in the distinctions between each of these levels. Because it's me in relationship to all of life, and any particular time in my life, I seem to be focused on one or more of those dimensions. So a good part of what I've learned in nonviolent communication seems to focus primarily on my relationship to the one aspect of it, just dialogues, interpersonal communication. And the focus today, the process, the exercise, has to do with building the capacity to be in relationship. And specifically, narrow it down more specifically, to prepare for a particular exchange and dialogue. Find that if I want to be able to be in relationship and dialogues, it requires a particular focus of intention and preparation. So this practice has larger implications. The practice itself brings my attention to if there's a particular exchange or relationship or dialogue that I want to have with someone, then what I want to do before that is I want to prepare for it. I want to center. Otherwise, I don't know that I'm going to actually experience what I want to experience in this dialogue unless I create clarity of intentionality, clarity of interconnectedness, and clarity of what it is that I'm wanting, what my objective and my intention is. Clarity of intention for me is very important.
What was the second one again? I'm sorry. Intention and objective was the first and third. What was the second?
Interconnectedness.
Connectedness.
Interconnectedness.
Yeah. I have a request. Sometimes I have a hard time understanding people that are talking directly to you as an answer, and they make clear that you get the answer. And for me, the volume is not enough, so I would appreciate everybody to have in mind that the rest of the group would like to participate in the answer.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Speak louder.
Out so the rest of the group can hear.
Yeah. Okay. So again, I'm presenting this in what I see as a larger context of me in life, me in relationships. And the preparation for a specific dialogue includes my preparation, my practice for how I want to live, how I want to be in life, with a particular kind of intentionality, particular awareness. So I want to be have the intention that is in alignment with what I value. Okay. And the principles of nonviolent communication guide us to create this clarity of intention with the value of the principle of here I am as a human being, an authentic something, then I want to connect, communicate, create an exchange, a mutual exchange that we call communication, so that something happens. And we use the word connection, mutual exchange, an experience of mutuality. But unless I'm clear about how to achieve that, I'm going to be just kind of blindly trying to communicate something with my conditioning. So the clarity of the intention is really important. And then the map of what do I do to navigate this territory in the space of relationship? The knowing, the ability to recognize, which is what we focused on a lot this week already. The ability, the capacity to recognize the difference between what happened and what my mind is telling me about what happened. Otherwise, I'm just going to react according to my interpretation and my judgment. And then what do I want? So even this simple question, if I'm going to actually experience a dialogue as I want it, how many of us approach dialogue without being clear on what do you want when you approach somebody? Asking this question, I think, is very important. What do I want? Oh, I want them to change their behavior. And we say, well, I've learned in NBC that you make requests. So I have a request. Would you be willing to do that before I do the other stuff that is the foundation of any request? What's the other stuff? What do I want? Do I want them to change my behavior? Or do I want some kind of quality of being in relationship to this other human being? So that whatever I do and whatever the other person does, whatever actions and requests are made, are done in the spirit and in alignment with this value. Otherwise, I'm just focused on outcome. Because I can immediately say my need, because I know that, but it's still kind of self-centered, rather than us-centered. So I want to be clear on what my intention is. I want to remember it. one of the principles is easy to intellectually understand, and we can say, yeah, I know that, but to live into it is another matter. The principle of my needs and your needs equally matter. Who I am in my life force, what matters to me, and who you are in your life force, what matters to you. Can we bring that together so that there's actually a different reality that's created when we meet in our communication? The equally mattering and equally valuing you in your needs and me in my needs. Often, in exchanges that are disconnecting and distressful, we get caught up and lost in our reaction. Or that perhaps we want to do something out of fear, or out of anger, or out of frustration, or impatience, and want to manage it so that we perhaps settle into some degree of safety and familiarity. Something like that. There's any number of motivations. So this approach, the notion of preparing for a particular dialogue, has a much larger context because it's the way I want to live. I want to live with this clarity of intention of whatever level of relationship I am engaged in life, whether it's others, whether it's working with systems, businesses, organizations, and the individuals and the processes involved with that, whether I'm involved in the exchange with the world in my everyday functioning, whether I am conscious of my relationship with all of life. I want to be clear in my intention and purposeful, because only when I am clear in my intention and purposeful does it set up the proper conditions that allow the very purpose of what I'm about to manifest and to actualize more and more and more. Otherwise, I tend to be lost. So I have an interchange with somebody, or a series of communications, interchanges with someone, and I experience something other than a mutual caring, mutual connection, you know, that fullness that we experience when we're really there with each other. And something is disturbed in me. I'm reactive. Something's not working. I'm in distress. My needs aren't being met, etc. And I want to talk with this person. That's the immediate thing that I ask myself. What do I want? What is my intention in wanting to talk? Sometimes the immediate answer is, I want to be heard. Does that sound like a familiar motivation? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I think being heard is part of what happens in a mutual dialogue. Is there something missing in that? What might be missing if I say, I want to be heard?
I want to hear.
Pardon me?
I want to hear. To hear.
To hear, yeah. Yeah. No, I want to hear the other person. Yeah. I want to hear them. So, and then I say, well, why do I want to be heard? And why do I want to hear the other person? What is that principle? Even if I don't experience it, can I start out with a premise? The as if I'm aware of it, the principle that, and we've experienced it, I think, that when I am visible and seen and heard by another, and in that same space, when this person becomes available and I see and hear them through their judgments, through their fears, through their confusions and mine, and we make our way through that in this dance, and we finally come to this place of, oh, I see you and you see me, and each of us can say that. That space, this is what I want. What gets in my way is I've learned to focus on, if only this would happen, if only this behavior could happen, or if only I would hear some regret because the behavior that you engaged in triggered irritation and frustration in me. If I could only make that right somehow. I want to be clear if that seems to be my motivation, so that I can realign myself to what my real intention is, that which serves the nature of this being and this being. To come to that place before we think of making requests of each other. This is the place I call mutuality. That's how I define mutuality. I want to express myself through my honesty, through my vulnerability, so have you support me with empathy, so that I actually can have the experience that yes, you understand, you see me, and have that be mutual.
I had a question that sometimes it seems to me very paradoxical that when I come to that place, when I'm ready equally to listen to myself and to listen to the other, then I don't need to talk anymore. It feels like, well, then the need to express this urge, this whatever is in me, is soothed and calmed down. Then I wonder, do I really need to talk about this anymore? It seems like I've done the process already on my own. So.
I think that's an important place to come to. If you can come to that place, beautiful. Because then when I come to that place, I've already addressed that energetic urge that would have moved me towards talking. It has already been clarified and connected to. And I check in. There is no need to connect anymore. I want to be really clear and examine that. Is there some life-serving benefit to communicate with this person? Maybe, maybe not. Sometimes it's dissolved because it has transformed into something already. And sometimes it's still there. I want to connect. So this is the mutuality place. I'm not even talking about requests yet. Premature requests, I think, often get in the way of creating this quality of connection. And I just want to hint, I don't want to go too much into this, but this is the nature of requests that I experience as coming from this quality of connection and the kind of requests that I enjoy offering and receiving. So, both ways, when I say receiving, it's the same thing, offering. I feel so much more alive and connected and joyful when I receive a request and it's very clear to me that this person is connected to what matters to them, to their heart, to their value, to their need. That they're connected to it and that they communicate this with authenticity and I receive it. That's one half of it. And when there's that, I go, wow, there's something in me that wants to support that. It's a natural movement to want to nurture you when I see what's beautiful for you, what's valuable for you. And here's the other part that makes it even more powerful. When this person communicates their request to me, and not in the words so much, but the words also, when they communicate the request to me and they say to me, and you are free to choose whatever will bring joy to you. Meaning, I don't have to have it. This is the crucial part. And in that, there's all kinds of things that are implicit, meaning, I'm going to ask you this. This is the passion, the beauty, the value. This is what support me. I make that clear. And I'm absolutely, totally at peace if you say no. How many times can you say that about your request? I am totally at peace if you say no. Absolutely, completely, 100%. accept it if you say no. And if you say no, being at peace does not mean that I will not feel disappointment or sadness. It just means I'm willing to experience disappointment or sadness or pain and be at peace with that. This is for me the nature of a request. This is something just to ponder, each person, just to take on. Before you make a request, is this so for you? Are you willing to receive a no? Are you willing to be in the disappointment? What helps me to be willing to receive a no is if I am connected to the yes in that other person. If I'm connected to the reasons that they're saying no to me is always a yes. Always what serves them. This is the other extended principle in NVC. I see that this is important to you. Oh, I see how important this is to you. See what's beautiful for you and what's the actions that would be taken in serving what's beautiful for you, your strategies, and the actions that would be taken behind my request don't match. So, and then you say, this is what's important to you, and you're not willing to respond to my request, to say yes to it. Okay. I'm at peace with that. Notice that what that requires is the capacity to hold, to mourn my own needs that are not met. The capacity to be with my, and to take full ownership for my own disappointment, my own disheartenment, and at the same time, the capacity not to resent the other person, but to celebrate. To celebrate. To dance inside of me that they are finding joy in their yes. How many of us can do that? Especially with these requests that are very, very important to us. These for me are the most crucial principles of this that I've learned in this way of communicating. And then if I want to be able to be aware of these principles, even if I just understand them cognitively as a guideline, and then I engage in the living practice. Okay. There are very specific steps in the process, but I wanted to give you the background for these steps because it's a larger field of principles that holds this practice.
But then just to be clear, when you say capacity to celebrate, it's also, even if when we make a request and it's not a yes, we receive the ability to celebrate.
Their yes. And to mourn our...
Oh, their yes to their own needs.
Yes, to their needs, yeah. That person meets their needs.
Yeah.
Look at the joy over there. Look at the relief. Look at the support. And I'm supporting them in there by accepting their yes and receiving their no. Mm. There's such a beautiful, deep trust. I'm in awe of what happens when this kind of exchange happens between two human beings. It's so beautiful. It goes beyond words.
I experienced it yesterday when I wanted a hug from Pierre, and he really was strongly in saying no, and it was mourning. But I really could celebrate, I really could feel the energy of his yes again to his authenticity.
Yeah.
That really was touching.
And finally we had
but
from another from another space.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Moment by moment, yeah. And then in these exchanges in everyday life, what makes it difficult? Just for me, I want to name what makes it difficult for me to form these kind of connections. Not always, but most of the time. One of the biggest, there's a number of things that make it difficult. One of the biggest things is in the midst of life, sometimes the pace of life goes by so fast. This is happening, I need to go there. It takes place so fast that I don't know how to create the space and time to create this connection with you.
Mm-hmm.
This happens to me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to recognize that. And when it's happening so fast, I want to remember and register what is happening. Can I at least momentarily sense and name within myself the other person's needs and mine? Just that. Can I just do that? And remember it, because I'm choosing not to take that time because something else is calling me over here. And then over here. So time and the pacing and the speed of life is such that it makes it difficult and challenging to create this quality of connection with the other person in that moment, in the space between. And so what's the option that I have? If I'm not able to do it in the space between consciously hearing and communicating, then I want to do it within my own space. This is what I can do. And this is the capacity that I've cultivated and continue to build within my space, to feel the, sometimes it's a wince, ooh, I know that they're in pain. I know that they're uncomfortable or unhappy. I sense it, I see it in their energy and maybe in their words. And I'm not going to attend to it right now because of the pace of what's going on. But I often experience this in a group like this. There are many different contexts. But then because something else is going on, perhaps the focus of where we are in the larger group or another person's expression, I choose to go there instead of over here. But what gives me peace and centeredness, the more and more I can within myself acknowledge that that is there, and I feel that, I let myself feel it and recognize it. So I just wanted to name, there's many examples of one of the barriers to connection is the pace of life, the speed with which we interact. And the lack of opportunity or the lack of perceived opportunity to take the time to let's sit down and talk with one another. That.
I think with this, Robert, sometimes I also experience in my own life that because of that pace, a yes to something sometimes said, not out of obligation because the person hasn't had time to connect really with their needs, but then the behavior that follows isn't congruent to that. So really I can see it's a full no.
Yeah.
But they said yes, and then being with the pain of that kind of confusion, there's a total yes, we agreed on something, but the action is showing no, because everything was just too quick to connect in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are many examples like that, that the ramifications of how fast things go.
Another one is trust. I wanted to ask my headmaster lady one time to get time off to attend a workshop with Nada that where I was going to translate, and to me that was so meaningful. There would have been nothing in the world I could have imagined that I would have loved to do more than sitting a week beside Nada and channeling her wisdom and having this intimate connection that is between a trainer and a translator. And I went to my headmaster, and instead of making myself raw and vulnerable and showing my passion and my joy that I would have with that, so that would have given her a chance to really want to contribute, I basically said, what do I have to do to get the week off? I'm willing to work twice the hours next week or something.
Create the strategies.
And then later on, last year in August when we were here, I worked on that to see what prevented me from actually going and showing my passion. And I found that I was so afraid that she would not see the beauty in it and that she wouldn't care and she wouldn't you know, she wouldn't accept me with all this, and I was so scared if she would have basically gone, you know, yeah, is what much more important that all the teachers are in and we don't have problems in the class. So, and I was so afraid not to get this acceptance and the confirmation of my beautiful urge to be in this joy that I didn't want to go there. And so then basically her answer was no.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And I couldn't believe it because I was just like, what do you mean, no?
It's right, not right, working for right. me. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is what happens
yeah, exactly.
sometimes, that there's really a difficulty to, it takes such courageousness to really make yourself,
yeah.
make it in front of you.
And that's one of the elements that for me is a requirement for a real connection. Make myself vulnerable.
Yeah.
Share my passion. So I want to name systematically, there's four things that I'm aware of that create disconnection, contribute to disconnection. I've already named one. I'll call that time as a resource. Sometimes there's other resources, like physical well-being. Sometimes I'm so tired, or I'm in pain, or sick. Bodily resources. That I'm attending to that so much that I don't have the energy to put into an exchange. That happens a lot. It's important for me to recognize these barriers because then it gives me the clarity of what is there and where I can address my attention. And to give myself compassion for being able to recognize these. Okay. The other barrier, which a lot is what we'll work on, is I'm lost in my reaction to an exchange. I'm in jackal, I'm in judgment, fear, which is what you just said, which is a form of jackal. I'm in some form of fear and jackal thinking. As long as I'm lost in that, it prevents me from connecting with myself and the other person in a more authentic way. The third one is I may not be so much in the jackal, maybe part of that, but I'm not really connected with what I want. I'm not aware of what I'm authentically feeling and needing. It's simply not available to me. And sometimes that shows up where I think it's this thing that I'm needing, and it's really not. It's something else. It's some other something I haven't been able to name. So when I'm not aware and connected with what I'm authentically feeling and needing, and this goes with the bodily sensation, when I'm not connected to myself and the aliveness in the body and what I'm feeling and what matters to me and my needs, then I'm not going to get the kind of connection that I want.
Yeah, and I'm connecting to what you just said before, the showing the passion and also being afraid that she will not see the beauty in them. And I was writing down, and before, you know, when I connect with that in myself, to also myself recognize the beauty of this.
Yeah.
Before I wish to receive the seeing in another, to really connect and to feel the beauty of my own.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And to go in there with that.
The fourth one I've said before, I'm attached to the outcome. I'm desperate. I'm fearful. I'm angry. I'm telling myself that situation and conditions are unacceptable and it must be this way instead of this way. That is another extension of being attached to my jackals, but it's a more specific example of my attachment to my own judgments and fears. I am attached to the outcome. I ask myself, am I willing to receive a no before I make this request? Unless I say yes, then I want to be careful because I'm not likely to get the quality of being with another person that I really value. If that's the case, it doesn't mean I'm not going to make my request. I'm less likely to, but it means I'm needing more empathy and healing for the desperation and the fear that's behind my unwillingness to receive a no. So these are the four elements that I'm aware of that contribute to my disconnecting from myself and therefore the disconnection between me and another.
Could you just repeat the first one?
The first one.
Yeah.
Lack of resources, meaning time, speed, physical resources, I'm sick, low energy, tired, those kind of things. Because these lack of resources pull me into a different pool of needs.
You said it would be five, but I hear four.
No, I just said four.
Oh, four.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can you, there are situations where there's only one answer that, where you're really attached to the outcome.
Yeah.
Life and death situations, maybe, or situations where any outcome except one would mean you lost your entire net worth. And so, can you, how, I'm struggling to see how the principles of NBC could apply in those situations, or even to come up with maybe an example, but.
Pardon?
You
say an example?
Well, I kind of do, maybe.
Yeah.
A boardroom example or a business example where
the
agenda of your partner is so different from your own that that it's a zero-sum situation. And
well, this is a case where especially it's important. Because notice the degree to which you are seeing that there's only one answer that's acceptable. To the degree to which you're attached to that is a particular energetic relationship to it. That I can follow that if I'm not going to live into the principles of mutuality. I do that, people do that all the time. At least I want to be clear that that's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm surviving instead of connecting. I want to be clear if that's what I'm doing. I'd also like to maybe consider the possibility that what I think will get me to this one answer only is different than other possibilities that could arise if I focus on the connecting. Did you hear what I mean by that?
Yeah.
If I really heal or relinquish or relax my fear and desperation that there's only one acceptable answer to this, and I go into the field of relationship, this is where magic can happen.
Assuming the other person is willing to be connected with integrity.
Well, I don't want to assume that they're that way or not that way.
Okay.
Because then I'm projecting expectations or rules about how a person needs to be.
So in a situation where the other person is just lying.
Well, then I want to empathize with them. I want to let them know that I care about them. That I'm there, interested. That I see them in their humanity. And that it's genuine. If it's not a technique, unless it's genuine, then I'm not going to be able to connect. What gets healed is this fundamental disconnection, seeing the other as opposed to me.
So that I, just one more comment, I just thought of it, like in a battlefield situation.
All right, now we're using examples that are not real.
Okay.
I'm willing to talk about examples that are real to you.
Okay.
Not hypothetical examples that I don't think would be helpful to you in your inner learning and transformation. Because that's what's important to me.
Well, the most,
yeah.
I mean, an example of where your business partner wants to remove you from the business.
Yeah.
And that's their agenda, for instance.
Yeah. What I'm suggesting is that there is another something, consciousness, that NVC calls me to. Another completely different agenda. Which is, I mean, the words are simple, but the experience is very challenging, which is, they have this agenda, I'm hearing, can I hear their Can I connect with what matters to them? Can I truly hear them? Can we create the space where we are actually create a channel of communication rather than both of us focusing on survival, getting my way, losing my way, etc. Which is the motivation I would venture in so many of these kinds of interpersonal or business negotiations. So it requires a radical exploration and ability to develop these skills.
Okay, thanks.
Was there another?
Yeah. Hand? Yeah, there were just an image coming to me as I was listening to you. This image of seeing a request, like offering a present. And this can be...
I didn't hear that word, like a what?
I was this image of a request being present for the relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Or can be a mind. You know, something you touch and it explodes. A bomb.
Yeah.
But not a programmed bomb, a bomb in which there's a place, if you touch, it explodes.
Yeah.
And I am in touch in how much care it requires for me to be able to take off all the explosive part of my presence so that it's a real present for the relationship.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I offer a request or when I receive a request, I can sense there's something explosive in it. If I say no, for example, something is going to be explosive, and I can feel an energetic distance, not for the request, but for the emotional charge in it.
Yeah.
I feel this, but it's. I feel it's when I in this situation, it's hard to explain to the other like, that my distance is not due to the request, but just the feeling that I can't really explain of something. I feel a danger. I feel something.
You mean from the energetic emotionality from the other person when you make your request that stimulates that in them? And then you experience this danger?
Right now I'm more in contact with when I receive a request sometimes.
Right.
I can feel in danger, so I would say no.
Yeah.
But it's not for the request itself, it's because there's something inside the request.
In the request.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that what you're referring to is that very sense. You're sensing that energy where they're not willing to receive a no.
Yeah.
You're sensing how important this is. The energy, the desperation, the aggression even, maybe, in that request.
Yeah, and
otherwise, why would it
be... to be received and hear if I say no or if I say yes.
Yeah, but before that, if you sense that energy, then where I would want to go is to hear how important this is to them. Before I try to entertain the request or not, I wonder what's behind the request.
Yeah.
What matters to them behind this request, so that they actually truly have the experience that I am connecting to what matters to them,
yeah.
And that I'm connecting to them. When that happens, I suspect that the energy would really shift from that person. You're like defusing that bomb.
An example maybe, when Lutz asked to speak louder,
yeah.
I felt a lot of an exploding energy underneath it. So I could contact with it because I hear the longing of being included and being a part of it. I think this is an example, maybe.
Well, depending on if someone heard that and didn't hear the beauty in it, heard a demand or I'm not enough or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
There's this way, but also what Nance is sharing, there's also, I mean, when he feels the danger is in himself, I mean, I'm in touch with something,
yeah,
telling something,
yeah,
about
that's his own experience.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm aware about my own conditioning,
yeah,
and how strong it touches me.
Yes.
If I imagine, if I'm telling the story, that I'm not free to,
yes,
say yes or
exactly,
no.
Yeah.
And here, this place is so sensitive,
yeah,
so then I don't feel so much available to reach,
yeah,
the other and to find his beauty, because I feel so much with my own conditioning and my,
yeah,
own fears of being trapped in,
absolutely,
something that I don't want.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you don't see your own beauty to say yes or no also.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
To connect, how important is it for me to be free?
I remember another workshop where you were using the picture of a channel that's blocked with trash. And at least this channel between me and the other person is cleaned up,
yeah,
from all this trash, like,
yeah,
being attached to the outcome.
Yeah.
My judgments, my thoughts, my fears. There will be no space for the connection from my heart to your heart.
Yeah.
And I still remember this. You were using it 2 years ago or something.
Yeah, it's a similar image.
And I like this image very much,
yeah,
because unless this channel is clean,
right,
it won't happen.
Right. So my responsibility in the dialogue is to heal my own stuff,
yeah,
my own obstacles. Now the challenge is that I sometimes or often think that it's not my obstacle, that it's you that's the problem. How you talk, what your actions were, that you don't care about me, that you're threatening. So that is what you say and do goes through my interpretation and evaluation. And unless I'm clear about that this is my obstacle, then I can't heal and clear the channel. So this is this process. Just to go into the specifics of this process, just to practice these dynamics, even though they have much larger implications, is that we start out by imagining a conversation or a dialogue that you would like to have with someone. Now, whether or not you're actually going to do it or not is a different matter, just for the sake of practicing these skills. So you bring into your awareness a relationship, an exchange that you've had with someone. And if you want to, as a result of this exchange, you want to have a dialogue with this person, this is how I want to prepare. First, the first step is I want to identify what happened in this exchange in relation to what I want to communicate. What was the observation? That's the first one. I want to be true to the handout as I speak. So
what page is that?
23. And then my intention is I want to get in touch with and experience my longing, my value, my need before I communicate it. I want to experience it. That's the intention. So when I follow that intention, I want to be aware of what arises in me. What are my blocks? Because that will arise in me. Just say I want to have this experience of mutual understanding. I want to have this understanding between us. I want to be heard because what happened before is I didn't have the experience of being seen and heard. So I want to connect with that need. And then something comes up. Oh, I'm scared. Or they're not going to understand me. Or they're just going to judge me. Or I'm afraid of expressing my passion because they're just going to... That is my obstacle. So I want to heal that with compassion in the way that we've been practicing this. Feel that in the body. What is the fear? Identify my own judgments. Oh, I see. I'm projecting this judgment onto them. Your example was very clear. Oh, she's not going to even, whatever, think that it matters. She'll poo-poo. Nope. She'll poo-poo it. We have that expression in English. Poof, nothing. We have this is what I'm And I'm convinced of that. They're going to do this. Or I'm afraid, because if I make myself vulnerable, it's too painful if they say no or they do this. So these are my own obstacles that keep me from connecting to expressing vulnerably what really matters to me. When I heal these within myself, this is the practice that we'll do in pairs, and this is what I will demonstrate before we do the practice. Then it somehow clears, it heals, it creates a relief and a presence, so I can then connect and be much more present to my value and what I want to communicate with vulnerability. And once I connect to that, I want to embody it, to feel it. Ah, yes, this is what I want. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what matters to me. And I feel it in the body. I have this, I don't know, I'm just going to make this up, Dale. There's this business, my whole something, net worth is at stake here. I want to make sure that I'm not motivated by fear and survival. What am I motivated by? I want to touch the beauty of what matters to me. This business is my life. This business, I've put my heart and soul and blood into this business. And this is treasure. This is a precious to me. I want to see it recognized. I want to be acknowledged for everything I've done to create this. I want to show you this passion, that this is what's at stake for me. This is what matters to me. So I want to be vulnerable enough to lay this out. And once I'm actually going through this very quickly, because it actually is a process. And once I have this feeling, and then this is my own passion. And then I want to imagine, guess, in this exchange with the person, in the situation, what do they want? What do they need? I'm not trying to name it and guess it, but I want to feel into that in this situation, something matters to this person. Can I connect to their humanness? Can I imagine their humanness? Can I imagine their value? Something matters. And that's what has given rise to their expression that might have been very difficult for me to hear. But I want to take my time to feel and sense into and guess. This is what matters to them. This is what's behind their pain. This is what's behind their anger. This is what's behind their judgments. Do the best I can. I may not reach perfection. And then once I have this sense of this is what matters to me, this is what matters to them, then I go into the second step of this process. I might even, as it says here, say aloud, this is the beauty of the need that is alive in me, and this is the beauty of the need that's alive in them, until I feel it. And then the second part of it is to set a clear intention to connect. Now, that means my intention is, imagining going into this dialogue, I want mutuality. These are the words that I use. You might use different words. What is mutuality? Means, these are my words, again you can use your own words. I want to reveal, to share and express the fullness of my feelings and needs, my authenticity, my vulnerability, so that the other person receives it in their heart. And I also want to hear, sense and feel their vulnerability, what matters to them, in me, in my undefended heart. So that we can enter this space where my yes and their yes are meeting. This is how I define mutuality. This is my intention. I want to have this before I go into the exchange. And then maybe even say it out loud. This is my intention. And this is a practice. I want to practice going over and over again. It might take me hours and hours and hours until I find a way to do this, and I might have the dialogue even before I've reached the perfect state. But at least I have a pathway that I can begin to practice. this principle.
I'm a little bit confused because we did an healing dialogue at the session last year.
Yeah.
And actually, we didn't have those steps. We go into it, and it was really beautiful. So, and you didn't propose this exercise at that time.
That's because this is a different process than that one. They're in different
but process. It has worked, I mean.
Yeah.
All right.
This is a different process.
Okay.
If I understand what you mean by healing dialogue, that term that I use, that is a different healing process than this one.
Okay.
So if you can just sort of, I think they all address essentially the same similar kind of dynamic. But this is a kind of a different way to enter into this experience.
Okay, the healing dialogue is not confronting, but directly with the person.
Yes.
And this one is more...
It's more internal.
Right.
This is maybe more accurately, you would say, inner preparation for authentic dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And the healing dialogue is when I encounter that person and actually share something about my inner life to them while they're present to me. So it's a slightly different intention.
I wonder if we have to make contact with the emotions and the needs of the others and the beauty of it.
That's what I said on step three.
Yes. Do you do that by imagining what it means to you, what the kind of, for example, the need of inclusion? Do you go into that, if that's what for the other counts?
Mm.
Do you go into that by imagining what it feels inclusion means to me in that case?
No, I do it focusing only on the other person.
So, but how can I feel what...
I that's why I'm guessing. I'm sensing it. And maybe what helps me is by connecting to... I'm sensing that with all the words they're saying and what they've said and communicated, and perhaps through their judgments and their fears, I'm sensing that they're valuing inclusion here. So I want to know at least sense, and maybe it helps me in a sense, this is what inclusion means to me. So maybe there's a similar meaning that they have, that this is what they're wanting.
But how can I come in touch with the beauty of their need, with the beauty of their needs?
Just by that.
Mm-hmm.
Just by that. This is not, I'm not trying to tune into their reality and say this is actually their reality. I don't know that until I actually communicate with them. But this is internally within me. I want to sense their humanity in my field. I don't even have to guess correctly. Maybe it's not inclusion. Maybe it's something else. Maybe they're wanting consideration and to be heard. It doesn't matter what the specific need is. What matters is that I'm seeing them, regarding them as something matters to them.
Shift the intention.
Shift the intention. Because I want to see them as a human being. I want to feel them. And they are expressing their heart. They're expressing what matters to them. And in the real communication, if I do that, it may be that what I guessed was different than that. But what isn't different is that this matters to them. This is dear to them. So it's not about guessing the correct need, but sensing into, and because I believe we share a communal space somewhere as human beings, where we all enjoy similar things. And I have a trust in this shared communal space where inclusion is something that's a value. And I don't know that they experience inclusion the same way I do, but I know that I can enter into the space of inclusion, and that's not just mine, it's all of ours. So I can connect to that. So, any other question?
Maybe I don't have a question, but
I can follow you, and I think it's very beautiful, and I can touch in on maybe my limits, because I can feel that very often in the dialogue I want to have with someone, I would love some support. What I'm trying to do, I would love from the other person also,
right,
to be in,
right,
in that flow.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
there's something lingering about saying, why do I have to do all the work?
Yeah.
Something
yeah
like that.
Well, I like the question, and I guess I'm going to jump to the immediate answer.
Yeah.
Is a different, why do I have to do all the work? It's like, why do I have the burden of responsibility? Why aren't they doing something? Why can't they be a certain way? Why can't they be perfect, loving, caring, present? Why do I have to do all the loving? It's so much work to love. I resent loving. I'm exaggerating. You get the point.
What he receives the way I
resent that love.
I want them to love me and receive me the way I'm loving them. They are faulty. They're not good enough. I'm exaggerating. But do you notice the edge in the experience of why do I have to do all the work has these implications. There's something in that. Yeah. Of something that I can go with that is painful, difficult for me, of how important it is for me, how I treasure the presence of support and receptivity. But you notice the moment I do that, I shift from expecting it from them to connecting to how valuable that is within me, how I long for this, how it's my something that's beautiful in me. And when I can do that, I find that I no longer am expecting them to be a certain way. I'm not saying that's easy to do. Just trying to identify a possibility here. Because I very much resonate, and it's a very familiar story in me, very much. Why do I have to do all the work? I'm very sophisticated at evaluating their levels of skill and what they need. Just part of the story.
But actually, in what Andrea is sharing, there is my only empowerment is to take care of my own inner peace, actually. And in this case, did you get it? My empowerment, my only one, is to take care of my own peace. So
yeah,
I do it,
yeah,
in order to connect peace. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, that's really behind it. And so, when I'm in this place, it's not, why do I have to do all the work? But, wow, I have the opportunity to connect with myself here in this fullness, in the longing for support that I enjoy. I get to do all the work. I have the opportunity to do all the work because it's mine to do. It's mine to do. It's not theirs.
I like this to connect to the longing in me for receptivity.
Yes, and when
because
you
that's really huge.
Yeah, and when you feel into your longing, how beautiful it is,
yeah,
to be met,
yeah,
with support and receptivity.
Mm.
When you feel that, when I feel that,
mm,
I don't want anything from the other person anymore.
I was going to say some of the same,
yeah,
that I know this place, I remember it from a former relationship, sort of, why do I have to do all this work? It was so hard work. And just now that we're talking about it, it becomes so clear to me, because this is a world I long for, and I can create it,
yeah,
from myself,
yeah,
without being dependent on the other one. It's so just so beautiful to feel,
yeah,
the difference between where I come from in these two ways of meeting the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But another aspect of that, as you're speaking, it goes to, you know, the reality of what I am experiencing when I experience another person doing the very best they can to communicate with me, and the way they're communicating, it makes it difficult for me to connect to really what's going on in them, to their authenticity, to their vulnerability, because they're not connected to it, they're not conveying that to me. They're conveying demand and judgment to me. They're conveying all of this. And so in that experience, how challenging it is for me to stay connected to myself in that. Because their alienated communication draws me into the field of alienation. This is the challenge. This is one, to me, one of the biggest challenges in communication. So this is an inner preparation.
And also, as you said, it's also the place where miracles happen, because even though you may have these judgments, they are just going to be in jackals anyways, when you really dare to go show your vulnerability, it's very hard for them to stay in this jackal, because it's so compelling to, that's like a different field, and you sort of open this field up and it radiates around them. And when my sister asked her headmaster to get 5 weeks off to do a yearly training of NBC here in Steierberg, his answer was, "I can see how much this means to you. We will somehow make it happen." And so, because he came from this different energy, and for him it was just a joy to contribute to that. And when I heard that, I was really thinking, darn, why did I do that?
Very authentic dialogue. I processed this actually with my partner at home while you were speaking, and I noticed how much I can actually feel her pain of not being good enough when she says something like, "Whenever you to these NBC events, you have that different voice."
Yeah.
And you don't have that voice with me.
Yeah. And you sense the pain behind that expression.
Yes.
And how is that a barrier?
The barrier is that I'm taking responsibility for her pain.
Right. And that's your jackal.
Yeah.
That's the jackal part. You're telling yourself that it's you're responsible for her pain.
And that makes it so hard for me. I can't receive her authenticity behind that.
Yeah. It's hard for you to connect as long as you're telling yourself that it's your fault.
Yeah.
So the healing would take place by you receiving support and compassion for your own fear and pain when you tell yourself that you're responsible.
Loops and another loop.
It can be, unless we're watchful of that unending loop, to go to the source of the loop. I think it's time for a break. Let's take a 20-minute break. I'll come back and I'd